Chase, Willie, and D-Base is presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York-certified comfort expert company. That is tough to say. Schedule now at springhillac.com. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios and streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry, Caroline Fenton, and for Chase McCabe today. We'll go to our 1025 The Game phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jonathan Hutton joins the show. Hutton, you've been out at training camp over the past couple of days. What have been your biggest takeaways from camp so far?
Oh, Caroline, good to hear you. Gentlemen, hello, good afternoon. Biggest takeaways, let's see. I think the offense at times has looked very crisp. Defensively, they have picked it up over the last several practices, though. That's been with the pads coming on, and I think that's a big advantage when the pads come on for the one-on-one matchup. So I think we're seeing some even play thus far, but I mean, let's be honest here. We're not seeing this offense at full strength because we're not seeing Derrick Henry run like Derrick Henry just yet. That won't happen until week one against the Giants.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see much of Derrick Henry or Kevin Byard or any of those guys too much in training camp. But to your point about the offense looking crisp and the defense looking better since the pads have come on, I would totally agree with you that the defense has looked better once the pads have come on. But I look at on Monday's practice, I would say the defense overwhelmingly won the day. I look at yesterday's practice, I think the offense won the day. And that's both encouraging and also a little bit concerning about the consistency. I know we're still early on in practice. Kind of your thoughts on the winners of the day from Monday and Tuesday since the pads have
Well, come on. So Roger McCreary stood out to me on Monday. I thought he had a great day. And for me, I'm trying to judge this team based on who stacks practices together more than I am one good day versus having a bad day. So Treylon Burks has stacked practices since he started, good day after good day, where you don't see him dropping passes, you don't see him dropping out of practice. Let's start there. I should have. That's first and foremost. He looks like a first-round pick. Beyond that, Chigakwankwo and Roger McCreary are the two rookies that stand out past Burks. And on the defensive side, the defensive line this is the first time we're going to see them go into a season full strength based on what they signed and brought in last year. But, again, we're not seeing that dominance because they're not getting after the quarterback. The signs out there say full tilt. It's far from it defensively because they can't go after the quarterback. That's what they're made on that defensively is getting after the QB like they did last year, especially in the month of December. And that I guess what I'm saying, Caroline, is there are only so many jobs that are really up for grabs right now on this roster. That's a really good thing, considering where they are. You're looking at wide receiver. There's maybe a starting job with Kyle Phillips, who overtook that slot position, it seems, yesterday. I wasn't out there yesterday. And up front of the offensive line, there's two jobs up for grabs, although I think we know the front runner's there. And defensively, there's not many spots available for starting roles, but there can be for certain sub-packages and positioning on who's going to be active on game day. And then you turn your attention to special teams to determine those answers. I can't believe I'm saying this. I mean, I want to see a preseason matchup. Not all that much, but I mean, that's where we're going to determine the back end of the roster, four or five spots. And then the joint practice work is really where I think we grade this team.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton at Hutton Outkick. You can follow him on Twitter. And that's where I was going to go, Jonathan, because you hit the nail right on the head in regards to, hey, if you go into camp without having a lot of holes to fill on your starting lineup, that's a good job. That's a good thing. You just want to add depth moving forward. And I think the Titans are sort of at that point once they get these other positions solidified that, okay, next year we should be okay. We're just filling, you know, just adding depth to our team. But we talked earlier about, you know, when will these guys start to separate themselves, or who's going to be the left tackle, I mean, right tackle, who's going to be the guard, who's going to be our receivers come day one. And I said, we're going to start to see some separation in the next couple of weeks here. And more importantly, it will yes. be when they practice Arizona and Tampa and then go into their preseason games, because they're not going against their defense anymore. They're going against another defense. They don't know what's going to happen. It's unpredictable. So they get an opportunity to play a game-like situation, but it's not exactly a game. So eventually, you know, these guys will start separating themselves from one another.
And this is, to your point, this is the point of camp last year where the emphasis turned away from Dylan Radins having really any impact on this team. He was the coaches raved about how coachable he was in OTAs and minicamp, and then they had joint practice work in full pads, and they came back knowing he wasn't physically there. They feel higher on him now in that regard. How much so? Well, to your point, Mace, we're going to find out in the joint practices again, where we fast forward 12 months and see how much he's developed, not just within this system, but how much he's developed in the weight room physically. And I think that's been the point of emphasis for him from the coaching staff and up top. And at wide receiver, it's just consistency and trust. There has not been I think it's probably Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, who has the most consistent rapport with Ryan Tannehill, and that's not a good thing. I mean, it's not necessarily a negative, but it is a question that I'm eager to see answered on who steps up and has the most rapport with the new quarterback, because Robert Woods is playing with a new QB now, but he's had a brace on his knee during OTAs and mini camps. He doesn't have that now. That's great. And Treylon Burks, as we know, was barely even seen outside at minicamp or at OTA. So he's been playing well too. I think those are all great things, but now it's time to actually perform when the evaluation cranks up a bit. And as you said, it'll crank up against the live action when they don't know exactly who they're game planning for and what they saw the previous day.
Now, do you believe we will see, because Vrabel has already said, he threw it out there, he said, listen, Derek's not playing in the preseason. And I get it. I wouldn't play him either. But Derek still needs to work against someone other than his defense. So do you expect to see him more during the live scrimmages with Arizona and Tampa than you have seen thus far?
That's a great question. I think we are going to see more starters play against Tampa and against Arizona in these joint practices if the roster maintains the health that they have right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Henry. I don't know how they'll treat him. I think he may be the one caveat in that discussion, because we can chat for weeks and months, and we certainly have, about Ryan Tannehill and which version of him we're going to see. To me, that answer will be determined by which version of Derrick Henry he gets behind him. And it's the same way we'll probably end up judging Matt Ryan in Indianapolis, is which version of Jonathan Taylor do they have behind him. Both of these teams are going to be based on the run, and Henry is their bell cow. I don't anticipate them using him any less than they did the first 6 weeks of last season, where he was on a record pace for touches and carries overall. I think they want to make sure they keep him healthy. At the same time, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing that happen, and maybe they give him a couple carries, but I don't know how much that really goes into the season. I don't expect to see him in preseason games. They made a determination last year in December not to play him in the final regular season game going into the postseason. So we've seen a record of this where they're comfortable just turning around and giving the ball first play of a game in live action rather than doing it in a meaningless exhibition.
We're talking to Jonathan Hutton from Outkick. We're talking Titans here. All right, Hutt, we were debating this right before you came on. I want to get your take. We were looking at the quarterback tiers that Mike Sando has, and you have these three games for the Titans and the Colts, the schedule difference, the difference between winning the division and not, and how it affects the schedule this year. The Titans have games against Joe Burrow, Aaron Rodgers, and Josh Allen. The Colts instead have games against Mitchell Trubisky, Kirk Cousins, and Mac Jones. Big deal? Not a big deal? Is that enough for some people maybe to say, that might be the difference in the division, just the strength of schedule for the Titans as opposed to the Colts?
Kirk Cousins and Mac Jones, and who was the quarterback in the middle you mentioned?
Yeah, Willie, so the Titans, in the division differences, they get the Bengals, yeah. So they get Burrow. The Colts instead get the Steelers, so they get Trubisky.
Okay.
The Titans.
That's a win. I mean, that's a victory for Indy in
it's
comparing
a huge,
the quarterbacks.
Right. The Titans in the NFC North get Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. The Colts get the Vikings and Kirk Cousins. And then the third one is AFC East. The Titans get Josh Allen and the Bills. The Colts get Mac Jones and the Patriots.
Well, the interesting – I mean, it sounds crazy, but, the Titans have had I'm looking at this. It's as you well know, too, it's not the head-to-head matchup of the quarterbacks. Josh Allen's also going against what I am looking at to be a number one or number two defense in the league. In the Tennessee Titans. I think they can be that good. They were number six in scoring last year. And so I think the quarterbacks against the Colts would also say, we'd rather play the Colts defense than the Titans defense in 2022. So it may even out a bit there. Tannehill, I don't have many reservations about him in the regular season, though. And I don't have reservations about this offense as long as they get back to what they did best, which is more two tight end and 12 personnel, and that's where Tannehill thrived in 2020. So while the Titans draw the tougher schedule in regards to those three games, and while it could determine the division, we can go back and play the history card, too, against how the Colts have done within their own division, where they can't win a game down on the in Jacksonville, and for the first time in a long time, the Titans swept the Colts, which never happens. So it ultimately comes down to those matchups. It comes down to Matt Ryan against Ryan Tannehill, to me, more than it does head-to-head matchups against those other quarterbacks.
Okay. Along those lines, final question.
Yep.
Mike Sando has, through his research, his polling of the 50 football people, coaches, executives, Ryan Tannehill in Tier 3 and Matt Ryan barely in Tier 2. Agree or disagree?
I agree with it based on last year's offense. And if I have time, I can clarify dive a little bit into this. I want to know what Tim Kelly means for Ryan Tannehill. If Tim Kelly is running the offense from a passing standpoint, what we saw in Houston, that is great for the Titans offense and Ryan Tannehill because it means he's moving up a tier. Last season, 12 personnel, two tight ends. Todd Downing called 228 offensive plays in 12 personnel. 92 of those 228 were pass plays. They only allowed 4 sacks in 12 personnel last year. But they only averaged 69 yards per game out of that package. Compared to 11 personnel, which is what he did in Oakland. So he went to what he knew and what his base was in Oakland. They ran, again, around 230 offensive plays in two tight. Last year in 11, they ran 659 plays out of 11 personnel, and 422 of those were pass plays. Really not a shocker. I mean, you've got three receivers on the field.
Right.
But they gave up 38 sacks in 11 personnel to 4 in two tight. So they have to get back to what they're built to do. And to me, it is loaded up front. You can still produce. I mean, they put up record numbers as a franchise in 2020 with Arthur Smith, who ran a lot more two tights. 12 personnel, he ran 350 plays out of 12 personnel in 2020. 145 yards per game came out of two tight in 2020. Tannehill gets credit for running that offense too. And, oh, by the way, that was Derrick Henry's 2,000-yard season, and that's where A.J. Brown made his money that he made this offseason. That's where Corey Davis went off and got signed by the Jets. I mean, guys got paid by going too tight, and Ryan Tannehill wasn't ridiculed in the offseason like he was this one. Tim Kelly, to me, is a big factor on what tier Tannehill ends up in.
talking to Jonathan Hutton of Outkick 360, and I think that's a fair point, because when you look at the Tannehill's 2021 season, you could point to several different factors. Was it the change in offensive coordinator? Was it the lack of a pass-catching tight end? Was it lack of pass catchers in general, just a revolving door of wide receivers? But I think another aspect of 2021 and a theory that was thrown out as to why Tannehill took a step back was the offensive line. Now, the Titans have addressed, you know, bringing in Tim Kelly to assist the offensive coordinator. The Titans have brought in Austin Hooper and drafted Chig Okonkwo. But one area that they didn't address was the offensive line. Hunter, are you concerned about this Titans offensive line? And if with the addition of different pass catchers, is it kind of a non-factor?
I'm concerned if Dylan Radins isn't the guy. He doesn't have to be the all-pro right tackle. He doesn't have to be the Michael Roos who started at right tackle that we eventually see at left, right? Like, he just has to be what we saw against San Francisco, where he made the start. He found out he was starting the day of the game, and he was fine. Like, he wasn't terrible. He certainly wasn't winning the job at left tackle over Taylor Lewan in the offseason either. Like, it was just okay. And he held his own. And I want to see more of that throughout this camp and throughout the preseason. Where he's going to have every opportunity to win the job. And he should. I mean, they drafted him high after completely whiffing on Isaiah Wilson. And they can't go back-to-back on this. Like, he's got to be one of the solutions and not part of the problem. And if Radins is that on the right, I feel much more certain that they can get back to what they were doing a season ago, where they don't have to worry about the edges. But I want to clarify this. Lewan wasn't himself last year either. He certainly seems more confident in his overall physical well-being with the knee and everything else. So there are reasons to be skeptical about the O-line, but I am circling the right tackle position more than I am anything else, because I think they can make things work on the inside. As good as Saffold was, and he was so good in the run game, and he was so durable, and a linchpin that helped solidify a group that was banged up in areas, included his own. I think they like some options they have on the inside and the grit and fight that you have to have for that position. Meanwhile, there's more athleticism and strength and just overall savvy at tackle. And Lewan's one of prior to the injury, he was one of the top athletes, top to bottom, on the entire roster, for size and pound for pound. I'm looking for Radins to win that job, and it should not be a big factor after the joint practices. If we don't know that he's the guy after that, then I think there's room to really start asking some questions about what's going on, because they haven't made it a point yet to put much pressure on Radins with Petit Frere, and I don't see that happening day one of the joint work either. I think it would have to be something that Radins isn't doing well that would signal a rotation there.
See, I had this theory that I was super excited about, that I thought Petit Frere could potentially be, you know, in this competition for the right tackle position, but I think over the past few days what I've seen is that might
it's
not
early,
necessarily
be early.
The case. It is early.
Give it a couple weeks.
It is early. I mean, keep in mind, like, this is generally the time frame where if you have a rookie or if you have a guy who you think is a solution to depth or to working into a part of your game plan and rotation on game day, like we're seeing it right now with Kyle Phillips. Kyle Phillips is now working up a notch. He's gone up a shelf in the rotation. They've inserted that in now over Mason Kinsey. We knew that was going to happen at some point, and it happens around week two, going into week three of camp. So we may see some guys adjust where they are in the rotation, and that's where I'll peek ahead to say, okay, maybe we've got more of a battle here. But right now, I think it's pretty clear that Radins has the right tackle job to lose, and he certainly can. I mean, we were kind of saying the same thing last year, and then they went to work against another team. And on the inside, while they may rotate some guys, I think Jamarco Jones in Seattle is what they signed him to be here. He's a swing guy that's played every position on the offensive line. He provides great depth, which they have needed over the last couple of seasons. and now they can slide in an undrafted guy who has worked his way up to a starting spot, which you can do on the offensive line at guard, instead of, as we've seen the Titans do, draft a guy in the top 10. I mean, this is how you work your way in as an O-lineman, in many cases on the inside, in the NFL. And I think they've done a nice job of making sure that they bring guys along the right way on the interior. Now it's about on the outside and protecting the edges.
Jonathan Hutton, we appreciate you. I know these guys will chat with you next week.
It was great chatting with you guys, and Caroline, you especially. Great to hear your voice on the radio. Jared gives you no airtime.
What are we, chopped liver here? What's up?
Jonathan Hutton, he is especially the best Outkick 360. Well, hey.
You got to recognize.
I'm new to the show. I'm like the shiny new toy up here. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, we'll get into your thoughts, your calls, your phones. Caroline Fenton in for Chase McCabe. It is Chase, Willie, and D-Mace on 1025-1063. The game. And you are listening, and we are in the final countdown to the fall sports season. There it is. And before everyone hunkers down in their man cave, we are providing the ultimate date night opportunity. A pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 16th. Tune into 1025-1063 all next week for your chance to win, presented by Blend Bar. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. And on the Game Nashville app, Caroline Fenton in for Chase McCabe. Go to your phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Viking Matt texts in and says, well, of course the Titans have the tougher schedule. They won the division. And, well, yes, of course. That's what's going to happen. You win the division, you get a tougher schedule. But I think the difference in just how difficult – how much more difficult the Titans slate is than the Colts, I think, is the biggest thing here.
Well, it's specifically the quarterback.
The quarterback comparison.
That's what we're trying to – I mean, it's obvious that when you win the division, you get a tougher schedule. But some years, it turns out to be more distinct than others. And
some divisions may just be more top-heavy.
No question. Mm-hmm. And, as we know, when the season unfolds, things change. And when you face teams, they don't seem to be as good. I remember one year, Derek, you guys played – the Buccaneers, mm-hmm. the final game of the regular season. Remember this? 2003? Yes. Steve McNair was hurt.
Mm-hmm. Neil O'Donnell?
Billy Volek got hurt.
Oh, it was Billy.
They had to sign Neil O'Donnell out of retirement, mm-hmm. right? But the Buccaneers at that point, they were the defending Super Bowl champions. But at that point in the season, there were 7-8 or something. Mm-hmm. They had all kinds of guys hurt. They just weren't the same. But when that schedule came out, you're like, oh, man, Titans, Bucks, last game of the season. That's going to be unbelievable.
Grind.
But you guys beat them easily with mm-hmm. Neil O'Donnell, who had just come off the street. And he played a really good game, and you guys beat him soundly. So it was by the time you played that game, it didn't seem like that tough of a game. You guys expected to beat him, and you did beat him.
Yeah, we did. I think I had 2 touchdowns that game, if I can remember. Yeah.
Okay.
But I didn't realize – that was the case, what you brought up, that Billy got hurt. Because I remember Billy as being the backup, but I remember him so because he played a lot. Was it the 04 season? 03, 04 season?
The following season, when
he played
Steve
a lot.
McNair
yeah.
got hurt, Billy
he played
Volker
a lot. That's
a lot.
Where, yeah, not that.
You guys threw for a lot of yards, but gave
exactly,
up a lot of points.
A lot of points. Yeah. But the previous year, I don't know, I always had Neil in my mind, like he was the backup.
Well, remember, it was kind of a surprise move at the end of camp. The Floyd Reese and the Titans were kind of out of salary cap money.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Volek made a lot less than Neil O'Donnell, and so they made a really tough call. Neil O'Donnell was really, really not happy about that. He didn't know he was sort of playing for his job, and mm-hmm. Volek had sort of come on. So as it turned out, they needed Neil O'Donnell late. He had to kind of go back. And kind of, Neil,
to
will
go
you
to
come
the well
back?
Again.
Neil, will you come back? And he was like, he's kind of made Floyd sweat a little bit before he said yes. And then he eventually did come back. It was a good story. But the point is, the strength of schedule can look a certain way today on August the 3rd and look a little bit different on December 1st or whenever you actually play that game.
I mean, things change. Think about if the Titans play the Arizona Cardinals just, you know, a few weeks later. Because the Cardinals were undefeated the first half of the season. They looked like the Super Bowl favorite. And then just dropped off in the second half of the season. So it's all about when you get a certain team at a certain point and also just who gets hot at the right time. Mm-hmm. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to take your calls and your texts on that. But coming up next, we're talking a lot about quarterbacks around the league, but how do we feel about the Titans quarterback room as currently constructed? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Fenton in for Chase McCabe. It is Chase, Willie, and D-Mace on 1025-1063 The Game.
Mike, first day of pads, how nice was it to have, you know, Robert Woods, Farley both out there and taking another step in their recovery?
Well, I mean, it's just another step. I don't think that, you know, really it wasn't, I didn't give it much thought. I just want to make sure that what they're doing is helping them and that they're progressing and they keep responding well to the work that they're doing. And then, you know, I think that there's a pretty much a full workload. You know, there's a couple of drills that they're not doing, but we've known that for a while.
That was Mike Vrabel after the Titans' first padded practice on Monday. A professional down player, Mike Vrabel. But, hey, $20. That buys you lunch, a pizza, a cold beer, or it could put in a new pair of shoes on the feet of a homeless child in Middle Tennessee. So that is what Souls for Music City is all about, raising money to make that happen. So will you help us in that effort? Text DONATE to 615-737-1025 and make a $20 donation more if you'd like. But $20 is all we're asking for. So let's make a difference in the life of a child, one pair of shoes at a time. And thank you for your help. So I think one big storyline going into training camp is, what is Malik Willis going to look like? Of course, Ryan Tannehill is a big story, not just in training camp, not just in the regular season, but, you know, just off season as well. Just the whole story surrounding this Titans team has been Ryan Tannehill. But spending a third-round pick on Malik Willis, I don't think anyone expected Malik Willis to come in here and instantly compete for a job coming in from Liberty, you know, dealing with one-word play calls, dealing with the competition in college football that's much lower than maybe some other rookies that are coming in here. But I think one big thing that I wanted to look out for as the pads came on and as rookie minicamp and OTAs went underway was, what does Malik Willis look like? You know, how is he grasping a little bit more of a complicated offense? Because let's say, knock on all the wood, Ryan Tannehill breaks his leg and Logan Woodside pulls something, I don't know, and Malik Willis has to go in. I mean, that's kind of far-fetched, but it's also a realistic thing that could potentially maybe happen. Let's look back at Dak Prescott, mm-hmm. who was drafted in the third round and was the third-string quarterback and ultimately became the starter that season. So I was always thinking, you know, what is Malik Willis going to look like? But this was Ryan Tannehill yesterday about Malik Willis's development so far as a quarterback.
How have you seen Malik come along early in training camp?
I'm excited to be working with Malik. And he's done a good job of trying to do what we're asking. You'll have to ask Pat or Todd or Coach Vrabel, you know, on evaluating him. But I'm enjoying working with him. You know, he's a really good dude. He's coming with a great attitude and is trying to get better. So, you know, from my seat, that's all you can ask for.
So a glowing recommendation of Malik Willis's character from Ryan Tannehill, but not necessarily anything about on the field or his development as a quarterback. If the Titans do find themselves in a certain position where they have to go to the backups, how do you feel about Malik Willis and Logan Woodside and, you know, this quarterback room as a whole? Because based off of that and based off of what I've seen in practice, I don't feel that great about it.
Well, if the Titans are in a battle with Indianapolis and it's four games left or five and Ryan Tannehill goes down, you might as well just hand it over to Indianapolis at that point. Unless the defense is number one in the league and Derrick Henry is back to being Derrick Henry. But still, if you have no threat of a passing game, what's going to happen? We saw what happened when you shut Derrick Henry down or minimized Derrick Henry. We've seen it. Baltimore did it. Cincinnati did it in the second half. Kansas City did it. An AFC championship game. They didn't completely shut him down, but they minimized his impact on the game. And the quarterbacks couldn't do enough to win the game for them. So if Ryan Tannehill couldn't do it, what makes you think Malik Willis or Logan Woodside would be able to do it? If they lose Ryan Tannehill, I mean, I try not to say it's over. Because
it's over.
There's more factors.
You can
but
say it's over.
But
it's over.
It's darn near over if those two guys have to play. It is not an indictment on Malik Willis because he shouldn't have to play. You know, he's not ready to play. Exactly. He's not ready to play. I understand how people feel. And, you know, some people, he should be the backup quarterback. He should be the starter. Whoever thinks he should be the starter, you need to reevaluate how you look at quarterbacks. But even to say he should be the backup, the kid is still learning. And he has a lot to learn. So if he has to come into a game at any point to be a starter, that's not good. Logan has to come in at any point to be a starter.
But I don't even know if I feel great about Logan.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
As the starter.
We don't know. And for the Titans to have to go into a game, not just one game, but a stretch of games, with someone other than Ryan Tannehill, that's not good. I can envision them, if that did indeed happen, them saying, you know what, we're bringing in a veteran quarterback. Because at this point, we just don't trust the two guys.
And that's pretty scary.
Exactly.
It's not like Joe Montana sitting on the street ready for a phone call, you know. But I have always said, I think we probably have not given Ryan Tannehill enough credit for his durability. He has not missed, knock on wood again. We've done that a few times today.
A whole lot of that today.
He's been healthy since he's been here, and that is to his credit. So we have not had to find out about Logan Woodside. I think what you described, Derek, is probably the case for 25 teams, right? If they lost their starting quarterback to a season-ending injury in week five, their season is shot. I mean, there's very few examples over the history where that has happened and a team is still rebounded. Matt Cassel had a pretty good run for Tom Brady the year that Tom Brady tore the ACL, but they didn't make the playoffs, right? But he played pretty well.
They did, and finished 11-5.
Yeah, he did better than people thought. But it's hard. There's not a lot of those. But the question really is, can Logan Woodside get you through for a couple weeks? If it's a sprained ankle, you're out, you got to miss a game, you got to miss two games, can that backup get you a win or two? That's really the question for your backup. And we don't know the answer for Logan Woodside. And as far as Malik Willis, I'm not seeing where he figures into those plans this year at all. To me, the question is, how much can Malik Willis learn by the start of next training camp or by the end of the season when they have to decide whether they're bringing Ryan Tannehill back next year and what to do about quarterback next year? How much he learns behind the scenes, how comfortable they are with him, is everything in that decision. That's a huge decision. I don't even want to think about that right now because you're thinking so much about this year, but that's really the question for Malik Willis. I don't know about you guys. I'm not envisioning him playing any significant time unless it's an emergency or a serious injury situation.
And even still, I don't know if I think the Titans would feel comfortable about Malik Willis going in, even in an emergency situation. I don't know how they would address that. But, I mean, just based off of what I've seen, Malik Willis is not even anywhere near ready. But that's okay. It doesn't mean the Titans made a mistake in drafting him. John Robinson even said it was a risk, and it was. You know, you take a flyer on a quarterback in the third round. If he works out, great. If he doesn't, then that was a third round pick, and you can move on from it. So that's okay. I don't want anyone to hit the panic button, but I think that you bring up a fair point in next year. I heard y'all's conversation with Tim Hasselbeck yesterday talking about how he thought it was a year plus for Malik Willis. Well, if it is a year plus for Malik Willis and Ryan Tannehill does resemble more so the 21 Tannehill than the 19 or 20 Tannehill, let's not throw that out as a possibility, then what's the Titans' plan? Do they stick with a Ryan Tannehill who's been progressing? Or do they try and move on to a Malik Willis that may not be 100% ready? Do they start to find a new solution at quarterback? I think that's an interesting 2023 conversation that we have to keep in mind for 2022.
I would hope. My goal would be to have Malik Willis be ready to be the backup next year. In a perfect world, Ryan Tannehill plays really well this year, and you want him back next year. But as we know, the bar is set high, and next year they do have an easier way to move on from him salary cap-wise than they did this year. It was virtually impossible for them to do it. Nothing was impossible, but you just knew that the $38 million, it was just going to be too tough to change quarterbacks. Next year is maybe not the case. So he'll be a year older. How does he do this year? We'll see. But I would also hope that Malik Willis is ready to be the backup next year. That's a reasonable goal. I think it's a bridge too far to say he'd be ready to start next year. So if you had to move on from Tannehill, you still have Willis, but maybe you find a placeholder the equivalent of a Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm not saying you would bring him back, but somebody like that is always out there you can have for a year while you still see what Malik Willis is doing. It's not ideal because you want Tannehill rather to be that guy.
Well, if Tannehill ends up having a 2020 year or close to it, I think in their mind, keeping Tannehill another year is a viable option. It's more of, okay, after this season, like you said, Willie, has Malik Willis learned enough that now we can make him the backup to Ryan Tannehill? Because I think this is Logan's last year, period. I think this is his last year. And I think it was a signal by them drafting Malik Willis that if he comes on, then, you know, next year he will be the backup. Ryan will be the starter. And then they hope that after Ryan's done with his contract, he'll be 36, I believe, then they can usher in their franchise, their next franchise quarterback, who they hope is Malik Willis. Because they'll never be in a position, I don't think, as long as Vrabel and Robinson are together, they'll never be in a position to draft a top-tier quarterback, because those guys are usually top 15 picks. Really,
at least
top 10.
Not in the next couple of
exactly,
years.
Absolutely.
They're not going to be bad enough. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have a thought on that. But how is this offense going to look with Tannehill at under center and with Tim Kelly? Jonathan Hutton brought up a very fair point about what is going to be the identity of this offense. We'll try and break that down coming up next. But first, Willie, tell us about Loan Pronto.
Okay, let's talk Loan Pronto. They're rescuing a lot of home buyers right now and homeowners with great mortgage rates. They've got 30-year fixed APRs in the fours, 15-year APRs that start with a 3. So lots of people are refinancing to do home improvements or refinancing to just pay some bills, whether it's tuitions, credit card bills, car loans, whatever it is. If you need some cash, right now the rates have come back down. So lots of folks who had to take out loans with 5 and 6% rates just a few months ago are now refinancing to shave hundreds off of their payments. So Loan Pronto will get you the lowest rate no matter what your goal is. Not all lender mortgages are created equal. So Loan Pronto is known for being the low rate leader. So give them a call. You can even skip your next two house payments in the process. Call 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. That's 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, Caroline Fenton, in for Chase McKay. We are live from the Hillside Medical Games Studios. We had Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, on the show earlier, and he brought up a very fair point about how Tannehill can look better in 2022 with the addition of Tim Kelly, with the addition of Austin Hooper and Chig Okonkwo, because that's been my number one question that I know it will not be answered probably ever, is what is Tim Kelly's role exactly? Demas, you brought up earlier in the show, well, Jim Schwartz was brought in the defensive side of the ball, and the Titans' defense looked a whole hell of a lot better. Mm-hmm. You could say that's on the hands of Jim Schwartz. You could also say, well, the Titans brought in Bud Dupree and Danico Autry and really bolstered up that defensive line. Mm-hmm. Is it a combination of two of those things? Very much so. But that's an answer we won't have. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I wonder about Tim Kelly. What's his role on this offense? How can he kind of transform this Titans offense to resemble the 19 and 20 Titans rather than the 2021 Titans? So, and Jonathan Hutton brought up a very fair point about the quote-unquote bread and butter of this Titans offense. It's a running offense. As long as Derrick Henry is your running back, this is going to be a run-first offense. But where does the tight end come into play, I think, is a very fun question to explore.
Well, as we explore, I am a little bit distraught because, number one, the Braves hit a home run. They're leading the Phillies 1-0 in the top of the sixth, and I'm, you know, worried about my Mets a little bit here. Big pennant race between the Braves and the Mets. Also, I put the – oh, there it is, look. Dagwood, my man. What happened?
Dagwood to the rescue.
He rescued, but where did he find it? Where was it?
There's not really too many places where it could be within the vending machine.
It was on the side? I thought I checked the side.
Yeah, well, I guess you thought wrong.
First of all, this is what – we have a new vending machine in the studio.
A bougie vending machine.
Mm-hmm. It's new, and it's technologically advanced because now you can put your card in the machine. Mm-hmm. I went old school and had the quarters. because that's a long story too. I had to go to the coin laundry for one of these travel tournaments, had to wash the uniforms and stuff, so I got a ton of quarters left over from that. Pumped a lot of quarters in there, heard the drink drop, knew it had to be somewhere. I couldn't find it. I thought it was just gone. I thought it just got locked down in there, but thank you, Dagwood. I feel
thank
much better
you,
now.
Dagwood.
Now I can answer the questions about the tight ends.
Well, just the Phillies are down now, but, you know, it's just one.
Okay, one at a time.
To help you get through the rest of the segment.
But Hutton brought up a good point, D-Mace, in that going back to the days of Delanie Walker, right, this team the last several years has loved the two tight end sets. They've relied heavily on tight ends. It was not as much the case last year. Mm-hmm. Football Outsiders, last year, without Jonnu Smith and the change to Todd Downing, they ran a lot more three wide receiver sets. In fact, they had been in the top three in the NFL every year in two tight end sets since 2014. That's going way back to Delanie Walker. So they went away from that bread and butter a lot more to three wides last year. Now they've changed the tight ends around again. They've changed all the wide receivers again. Mm-hmm. They brought in the passing coordinator. So I think it's a wide-open question. How much two tight end are we going to see? How much three wide receiver are we going to see? What is the bread and butter, ideally, for them? Do you have a theory on what you'd like to see? Or like, would you like to see them go back to two tight ends more and have that be sort of the base set? Or do you want to see them spread it out a little bit more?
Well, I mean, I'm a former wide receiver. Put three out there, four out there. Let's roll. Hey, let's go to work. Four wide receivers, let's go to work.
I should have known who I was asking that question to.
We don't need a running back. No, you need a running back. Historically, with this team, anytime they've had quote-unquote great seasons or advanced far into the playoffs, they've had a dominant run game, really good defense, and, you know, the passing game, with the probably exception of, you know, 3 or 4 years in there, the passing game was okay. Now, there have been some, you know, periods where the passing game was really good, or the passing game was just, just pedestrian. But through it all, it was their run game and their defense. We saw what happened last year when Derrick Henry got injured. Now, they still were able to run the football, but not as effectively without Derrick Henry. They were still able to, you know, Dante Foreman was still, that's why he ended up getting paid.
Surprisingly well, right?
He ended up, you know, being a really good backup to Derrick Henry. But teams didn't look at their running game the same as they did when Derrick Henry was in the backfield.
The box isn't going to be stacked for Deontay Foreman like it is Derrick Henry. No disrespect to Deontay Foreman.
And sometimes it should have been stacked because he was running hard.
It seemed like it was as seamless of a transition into the Deontay Foreman era as it could be.
Exactly. And that's what you want as an offense. But in every situation where this team has advanced or been really, really dominant, they've had a dominant run game. Some teams, they can kind of go back and forth. Pittsburgh can kind of go back and forth because they had Big Ben. So, you know, they didn't rely as much on the running game as they did when Jerome Bettis or some of those other guys were there. But their defense was always top-notch. With the Titans, they have to get back to the foundation of this organization. Going back to Earl Campbell days. You must be able to have a physical presence in the run game. That's where it all starts. They've never once deviated from that. When they've had those really, really good seasons, it's been because they were able to turn around, hand the ball off, play action, throw the football. When they don't have that ability to turn the ball around, turn around and hand it off, and defenses are scared, then it makes it more difficult. But if Derrick Henry gets back to where he was, which I think he will, that's regardless of them bringing in Tim Kelly, that is their anchor, the run game. They must be able to run the football. So with that being said, they got to go back to two tight. They have to. That's the bread and butter of what they do. That's what Vrabel knows. That's what that offensive line knows.
It's definitely what Arthur Smith knew.
Exactly. Arthur Smith knew. This organization, the DNA is run and play great defense. That's the DNA of the Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans, except the years when Warren Moon was just airing it out.
Run and shoot.
And you see what happened in the playoff game. They end up losing after they were up 30 points almost. Why? Because they didn't turn around, hand the ball off, and just eat up clock. You have to have that ability to turn around, get a ball to the running back, and the running back pounds the defense play after play after play. If the Titans can't get back to that, if they start to get all fancy, they're going to end up in the same position they were in last year.
And I think, you know, last year, they didn't have the tight end personnel to be able to support that kind of offensive scheme. Now you have Austin Hooper. And with Chigakonkwo, I like what I've seen from him so far in practice, but also I think he could be a fine starter, you know, come week one. I think that he can fill into that role as just being, you know, pure pass catcher. I think the blocking needs to evolve a little bit, and that I'm sure will come, and I'm sure that'll be a big emphasis in the offseason and as the season, you know, plays out. But I think the biggest thing here is, do the Titans have the personnel to be able to support that? And right now where it stands, I think they do.
And I think Swaim, him being back, knowing his role, how much does he play? He's not going to catch a lot of passes, but he's the blocker.
Right.
We'll see how, you know, what's the combination? If you're going to play two tight ends, is it Swaim and Hooper? Is it Hooper and Okonkwo? Can you figure out how to get both of those guys on the field? I'm curious about that aspect of it, if you want to go more two tight end.
615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have a thought on that. But coming up next, a little bit of a Titans breather, because Jarrett Stillman has a Tennessee Vols theory, and I think that it is so not true. So I'll get y'all's thoughts coming up next. Caroline Fenton in for Chase McCabe. It is Chase, Willie, and D-Mace on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and The Game Nashville app.